Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1, Story City, Ames, and the surrounding area, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Tom Beal. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Susan. It's good to be back as a co-host with you. It's been a long time since we've heard your voice here on Local Talk.
Yes, I've been gone since June up in Wisconsin. And as soon as I returned to Ames, I discovered things that astonished me and made me excited about having a chance to share them on KHOI.
Well, now I'm curious, but before we hear your story, I want to let our listeners know that we'll be hearing how the Octagon Arts Festival got that name. Incidentally, that's this weekend in downtown Ames. And we'll have some related history about the festival as well. And we're going to have a visit from my political reporter friend, Dennis Hart.
Well, my first discovery was last Saturday morning when Fritz and I went to Ada Hayden to do our favorite walk around the lake. And we were greeted by the fragrance of frankincense and white tents like they're going to have on Main Street for the art festival, with people who were clearly in Middle Eastern clothes and with displays from the Omani Student Association, with crafts and displays as well as henna hand painting and balloon towers. What I expected to be a familiar walk took me to a different world. And this, I learned, was part of the International Peace Walk, which was laid out all around the lake.
Well, to find out what you missed by not getting to do the whole International Peace Walk, we have the woman who organized that event, Kimberly Hope, from IRIS, and an international student, Hainan Massad. Morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Well, why don't you start by telling us what IRIS is?
IRIS is a 501c3 nonprofit here in Ames. We've been here for about 20 years. We have a mission of promoting international understanding, development, and peace by connecting Iowa to communities worldwide. We've had more than 2,000 international participants from almost 50 countries in Iowa over the last 20 years.
Wow. Well, what was the purpose of the Peace Walk?
Well, we were looking for a way to do some sort of fundraiser that could get the community involved, and something that I thought I wanted, you know, families to be able to come to and learn about different countries and cultures. My colleague Mary Hallman considered some sort of 5K or walk, and then my executive director Del Christensen thought about some sort of peace walk, a walk that would really promote what we're here for. And then my idea was to add the booths that Susan was talking about so that as people walked around the lake, whether they came specifically for the walk or if they just happened to be at the lake that day, that they could stop at booths and they would have a passport and kind of feel like they were traveling to another part of the world for
Saturday. It sounded like a wonderful event. What countries had exhibits?
So we invited people from Ames, different organizations, as well as student organizations from campus. We had Malaysian Students Association, the Omani Student Association, SANKELP, which is an Indian student association, and then the International Student Council from Iowa State. And the International Student Council represents a lot of different countries. And then also from around our city, we had the Public Library, Ames Human Relations Commission, Worldly Goods, and Access.
Well, a lot of interesting groups there. Mm-hmm. Hainan, you participated in the Peace Walk?
Yes, I did.
And can you tell me what you did?
Well, I work as an intern at IRIS, but I was a part of the committee for the Association of Malaysian Students at Iowa State. I was their past publicity director, and I am now currently the videographer for International Student Council, so I'm highly involved in these clubs. Where I worked during the Peace Walk as the last village, we had a hijab booth, so we had, you know, participants or attendees for the walk to try on hijabs and try on different clothes from different cultures around the world.
Sounds like fun. Did you get a lot of questions from the visitors who were there?
Oh, yes, we did. We encouraged them. We highly encouraged participants to ask about why Muslims wear the hijab and, you know, to break that barrier between not knowing and understanding why they are wearing that.
One of the great things about Iowa State University is that it brings so many people from so many cultures here, mm-hmm. in what might otherwise have you might consider kind of an isolated state in the middle of the country. But in fact, we feel very international as a result of so many students and others. And then this event itself, the Peace Walk that we've been describing, which took place last weekend, wasn't it? And is that an annual event?
It's going to be. We had such positive response from everybody who came, and we had hoped it could be, but we weren't sure what the response might be. And we're very strongly encouraged to continue it every year.
It's such a great setting, too, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it's gorgeous, beautiful place and wonderful weather that day.
Well, Susan and her husband had a wonderful walk around the lake, as she has said. And she points out that there were a lot of people there wearing green T-shirts. Mm-hmm. What did that mean?
So those were our volunteers. We had students from Iowa State, IRIS staff, a former IRIS staff person who came back for the event, as well as our YES students. And I know my executive director will be on again next week. He'll be talking more about IRIS in general. But our YES students are scholarship-winning high school exchange students from the Middle East, Africa, and Southeast Asia. And so they're placed all over the state of Iowa this year. And many of them came to the event, and they helped as volunteers. So we were all wearing green shirts and just trying to encourage people to ask all those questions Hanan was talking about and get their passports stamped everywhere around the lake.
What a great idea. Susan, you certainly saw them in the green T-shirts, and I gather you had a great time there.
Oh, I did. I didn't talk to the people in the green T-shirts. The interviewees that I had at the Mani Student Association were the only ones who were dressed with just polo shirts. I'd like to play a little clip from their interview because it, I think, expresses one example of how students get here and their response to being in Ames. But there were some other questions I had. One of the things I noticed at these tents, which I guess are called a village, this is an Amani village, was that the hijabs were not like the other ones that I'd seen. They seemed to be a little lighter in the sense, not quite so heavy. Did you have in your costume closet, did you have a variety from different countries? Are they different in different countries?
They are different in different countries because in the religion we have four different school of thoughts, and then they differ from one another. Some is less strict than the other, but we mainly, you know, preach the same thing. So it depends on where you come from. They might wear the hijab differently.
I wondered if it was regional, or I hadn't thought about being a different kind of Islam. Mm-hmm. And another thing that I realized in my interview, which I had to cut short partly because of time, partly because of the bad sound quality. A lot of people were talking around us. Uh-huh. But I realized I was asking questions that went beyond the culture. And it occurs to me that this is also an invitation for people to explore what goes beyond the clothing and the food. And I think the Malaysian students had some food, I understand. Is that right?
They did. They had teh tarik, which is pulled tea. And also, I think, tasting samples of nasi lemak, which is the rice was cooked in coconut rice. Mm-hmm. Coconut milk, I mean. I'm sorry. And also, there's like a sambal. It's like a spicy condiment at the side. Mm-hmm.
Boy, I'm sorry, I missed that.
Well, there's going to be a next time, I guess, next year. And I hope you have such a beautiful day. I guess that this is also a broader question for IRIS, because I now, in thinking back to the IRIS people, not just students, who've come here, that often they come from countries that have difficult geopolitical situations. Mm-hmm. And the focus is on the people.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
But it seemed to me that this was an open door. What happened with me was I asked a few questions about Oman, but the answers puzzled me, so I checked them out and compared them with other sources, the great source of all common knowledge, Wikipedia, and found some very, very interesting things. In fact, Oman used to be a huge empire. I never knew that, and I've studied history, but that wasn't one of the places that we studied.
Yeah.
And the other thing that was interesting is one of the two sultanates in the world. And it's very close to Yemen, which has a very unstable situation, but they're very stable. And there are reasons for that are quite interesting that you know, wouldn't discuss casually. And so this is a nice introduction to the world.
Yeah, that's exactly what IRIS is here for, that connection of Iowans to the greater world. And I'm just so happy to hear that that's the experience you had. And I didn't mention that this event, it was lined up with the UN's International Day of Peace, which was on Monday. And so it was an opportunity for groups, especially groups that you don't know and don't hear a lot about, to come out and say, like, we're here, we have things to talk about, we've got our own history and culture, and we want to share it with Iowans while we're here.
Actually, since we've been talking about the Omani students, Rick, could you play a little of that clip?
My name is Mohammed Al-Mukaini. I come from Oman, and he is
Mohammed Al-Abri from Oman.
We study here at Iowa State University. My major is electrical engineering. His major is chemical engineering. He's a sophomore. I'm a freshman. It's my second semester, though. Been here in Ames for about a year. Love it so far. It's an amazing place. So quiet, so calm, yeah.
I've been here for 2 years. I study for chemical engineering, as you said. It's a lot of good people and a lot of good community around. For all of the Omani students you could see here and a lot more, we are about 28 to 30 students, and a lot are coming. All of these people are funded by the government in a scholarship to study in Iowa State in different fields of engineering, science, and technology.
What government are they funded by?
The Omani government, the
We're
country.
Very thankful. The government, they helped us a lot. I mean, a scholarship is something wonderful, and you cannot get that every day. We're just really grateful, yeah.
I'm curious about why the Omani government, have they singled out Iowa State, or are there other universities?
No, they have a program for about 1,500 students. Nice. Finishing high school as a public school, and they will have the people who are applying for this scholarship to go around the world in different countries, including the U.S. So we have about 800 new Omani students coming to the U.S. every year studying for undergraduates, and they have about 30 universities in different places in Iowa, in America. So they will choose the good ones for each major. So for this, for Iowa State, most of us are engineers because of the good education in here.
But the main purpose is sending students outside, is learning the experience here. That's one thing. That's a really important thing. I mean, coming to the U.S. or any other country abroad of Oman, learning the culture, learning how the educational of the country, of the courses, it's different. People want that in a way. That's why we're being sent outside.
And it's not just the United States. They are going to New Zealand. They are going to Australia, United Kingdom, Ireland, and a lot of other Europeans and...
But you named all English-speaking countries, so you must have the language of your education system, an Arabic language, or is it English?
So the official language is Arabic, but every student in every public school has to study English from grade 1 to grade 12, so he's ready to get anywhere after finishing grade 12.
Susan, I thought that was a very interesting interview, and I was amazed that 800 students are coming here to the U.S. for their higher education, and so many of them are coming to Ames.
Yes, they immediately have an Omani community, and this is especially nice for the children. There were a lot of children, not a lot, but there were children there, and as a matter of fact, one part of the interview that the tape that I didn't play was at the end. This was noon when they were taking down the display, and they had these balloon towers. So they were popping the children were popping the balloons, and it sounded like gunfire, you know, pop, 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 pop. And so the children have an automatic community of other children who speak their language, right. And so they feel at home. And the other thing that impressed me was that the policy of the Omani government is to send people abroad to see the world, become educated, come back, and then build a skill-based economy in Oman. And the foresight of this impressed me. As I said, I was very happy to learn about this approach.
You know, I was also impressed by the fact that these two young men liked it here, that they were comfortable here. They felt welcome. I think they said they liked the peaceful quality of the community, and that's great. You don't want to have people visit and feel that they're not welcome and not accepted?
Well, they probably wouldn't have been involved in an event like this if they'd felt that way. But
yeah.
Part of this purpose, as you stated, was to bring in the community and educate the community.
Mm-hmm.
But the students involved must have benefited also.
Oh, yeah, I think so. Like I said, I think that offering these students an opportunity to get off campus and share with, you know, just normal people who aren't in the academic world, you know, just families and children and Ames community is a lot different than the Iowa State campus. And so it was good for them to kind of interact with people who aren't – their radar isn't on for learning about new places and new things. And I kind of want to go back to what you were saying about the Oman Association and those students going back to their own country, like going out, learning things, and coming back. The other part of our program on Saturday was to raise money for our global grants and scholarships. And those are for our students who come to America, or not just students, any of our participants, students or adults. They come to America, they go home, and a lot of times they've learned so much while they're here, and they don't have the funds to continue school, or they have an idea for something that can make their community better, but they don't know how to make that happen. And so the money we raised that day is for people to go back to their home countries and make it a better place based on what they learned here in Iowa.
Well, that's a great idea. And we are talking about the Peace Walk that took place last weekend at Ada Hayden Park. So if you tuned in late, that's what we've been talking about today.
And we've had with us Kimberly Hope from IRIS and Hanan Mas'ad, who is an intern from Malaysia.
It was so great to have you come in.
Thank you, guys.
And what a wonderful event, and I'm glad you're going to have it again next
year.
Yes.
Any groups who are interested in joining us next year, please contact IRIS. Just Google us. We're right there. So we would love to have more groups next year.
One of the many amazing things that you can find at Ada Hayden Heritage Park. Speaking of heritage, we have a shift now in our guests. So if you will just give us a minute, we will be joined by Alex Pfeiffer from the Ames History Center, who will be giving us a segment of Why Is That?, which is our way of learning more about our community history. So here is Alex, and the question for today is, why is the Ames Art Festival called the Octagon Art Festival?
Hi, how are you guys doing today? Yeah, I've been down there, and there's nothing octagonal about it, is there? It's on a single line of Main Street and a few other roads. But, well, the Octagon actually gets its name from its first location, which would be the Octagon House, which was a house built in the 1870s for S.J. Starr, an Ames physician here in town. And they decided to build it octagonally. This is back in the 1870s, and it was more efficient. It kept the house warmer, being an octagonal shape, than a traditional square shape of a house. So that's one reason why he did that.
Do you know where the house was and what happened to it?
Yeah, it was at 228 Sumner Avenue. So that's about a block east of Duff Avenue and a block south of Lincoln Way, kind of just kitty corner, kind of behind the Butch's service station there. Today, there's Mark Hansen's auto repairs on that site today. But the house was originally used for the Octagon Arts Center from 1966 when they started, and they were there until 68. And then at that point, they moved to the upstairs of a Main Street business and then eventually to their current location. But and the house remained there until June of 1982, and that's when the fire training school used it as an exercise. Unfortunately, we've lost a few buildings in town because of the fire training school.
Thank you very much for that, because we'll have a firsthand account from Martha Benson, who was a founder, that tells on-the-spot recollections, which once the Octagon Art Center was out of there, that was out of their frame of reference. So it's really interesting to know that it continued to stand there and ultimately was burned down for the benefit of the community.
And the name remains.
Yeah.
But the name remains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it sat there for quite a while and then just got too worn down. They couldn't use it for anything. Before it could be saved, it was burned.
The rest of our program that deals with history of the art festival as well as the Octagon Art Center. As I was exploring this, I realized that the way you put together history is different kinds of bits and pieces. And the sound files that we have for this discussion with Martha Benson, which amazed me as somebody who was there, and I'll talk about this after she tells her version of being a founder. Let's listen to Martha and then follow the story. How did you first learn about the Octagon House, and how did you get drawn into being one of the founders?
Actually, Veronica Rudenberg and I were friends, and we talked a lot about the fact that it'd be nice for Ames to have an art center. And so it was really Veronica that discovered the Octagonal House. It was in very bad shape. It had been built, I think, in 1864. It was interesting because it was bought by a medical doctor, Dr. Starr, who also was an amateur astronomer. So he built a cupola on the top of the house and put his telescope up there. That was the story. And we were able to rent the house, or at least rent the first floor of the house, because students were living in the second floor. So we just decided it would be a good place to start anyway and call it the Octagon Art Center. But Veronica Rudenberg did eventually do a puppet show about Dr. Starr, but we got a lot of other people involved, particularly Priscilla Sage, who was a friend of ours and also an artist, and Janet Squires, who was a watercolorist and had worked for the Rookwood Pottery Company in Ohio, and she painted pottery. So we were all ready to do something in the way of having an art center.
What specific things did you do? What kind of activities did you have?
Well, when we started there, we had exhibitions in the living room, and we had art classes up on the second floor. At that time in the 60s, ceramics was beginning to be very popular around the country, and particularly stoneware ceramics. So some friends of Veronica's from over in Iowa City who were potters came and helped us build a stoneware kiln in the backyard of the Octagonal House. And so that drew a lot of people to our pottery classes there at the Octagon. And we did have some puppet shows there, but first we had to really clean it up and, you know, get it ready. And we had an opening sometime in January 1966, and we had around 500 people that came. So we thought, well, maybe this idea will take off.
Where was it located?
Well, it was over on Sumner Street. Actually, Veronica had spoken to Bess Ferguson, that was a good friend of hers, and said, well, where do you think we should find a place for this art center? And Bess said, you want to go to the wrong side of the tracks. And I don't think we knew there was a wrong side of the tracks, but she meant that we might find something we could afford. So the Octagonal House was 920-something Sumner Street, which was one street to the east of Duff.
It no longer exists, is that right?
Well, yes. We were there for a couple of years, or maybe 3 years, and we were outgrowing it. And we actually tried to buy it and see if we could move it to another location and maybe add on. And the owner of the house offered to give it to us if we would move it, because it's really commercial property in that area, and she wanted to sell the property. Since it was a historical house, Veronica and I went to the city council and with our presentation that if they would give us the place, I think that's what we wanted. But this was before the Ames Historical Society, and there really wasn't that much interest in it. It was really in bad shape and would have had to be restored, but it was interesting because when we were in the house, there were still neighbors around there who knew of the family and knew the house and had memories of what it looked like in the first place. But anyway, the city council was not interested, so we had to move to downtown Ames above the Lazy M shoe store. But we decided to take the name with us. So we were there probably 10 years or more. And at the same time, we were in touch with Mrs. Sweeney, who owned the former Collegiate Manufacturing Company building, the Masonic building, which, and the Masons still were occupying the third floor. So we were able to buy the ground floor and the basement and the first floor, or the second floor, I'm sorry. For a while, we operated in both places, but eventually we were able to get the rest of the building because the masons moved out. And so turned out to be a wonderful building. It's a lot of space. And so we did then remodel that building. And that's where the art center is now and seems to be thriving.
Yes, one of the most recent additions is a ground floor gallery, because yes. I remember it used to be only the third floor, which was certainly a visual barrier for people.
That's
and now
right.
you have, you just walk by and you see, oh, this is an art gallery. Let's see what's inside.
That's right. Well, we had always wanted to use those spaces, but we had to generate our own income. And so we rented out those spaces. And so I was very glad when they were able to take that space. It's a wonderful space now on the street level. And the shop has a wonderful space, too.
Susan, you've been in Ames for a long time, and I'm wondering if you knew Martha at the time of the old Octagon House.
Oh, yes. I also talked to Veronica Rudenberg about the house, and I have very different memories than Martha has because, of course, I wasn't a founder. I was just a supporter, and actually, I took the first class from Priscilla Sage in stitchery, it was called, but a lot of it was about dying. We died.
Yeah, please explain that.
We dyed yarn and old nylon stockings and fabrics to make stitchery collages. Mm. And I made one that I was very pleased with for a number of years. I thought of it as a firebird. My children pointed out it looked more like Gertrude McFuzz. But in any case, I just wanted to mention the essence of what I learned from Priscilla as we were putting our old stuff into the big pots of dye on the very small gas stove in the kitchen of the Octagon, that the process is really more important than the product. And before that, I'd always thought of art as being something that you were, at the end, you had something that you were pleased with. Well, it was the process. It
was. Well, it sounds like the reason the Octagon Arts Center has been so successful is that it engaged the people in town. And you were participants. You weren't just observers.
That's right. And being in a class was an experience. It still is, I'm sure. And the clay was really also an experience. And they had a raku pot party where people made these little Japanese pots and fired them in the kiln that Martha described. And just really quite amazing things.
It's wonderful that you didn't burn down the Octagon House.
Well, that was later. We saved that for the fire department. And yes, there's so many memories that I have of the things that were provided for the community by the Octagon.
Well, it's a real treasure. And most people in the area know that this weekend is the Great Octagon Art Festival in downtown Ames. So we're talking about the Octagon because this is a great event for them.
Oh, well, and there's a little segue into history for that. I'd like to mention that the very best history of the beginnings of that big fundraiser for the Octagon was not really called originally the Octagon Art Festival. It was Art in the Park, and it was at Banshell Park. And Carol Horowitz had an interview on the 17th on her Thursday KHOI Previews the Arts with Heather Johnson, the director, current director of the Octagon. And Carol was at the first Art in the Park with her children,
wow,
with their sons. So this is also a little piece of that history.
That was in 1970, I believe, right?
I believe that's correct. She has already told that story. So our continuation of this, our next guest will be a vendor at the festival as it changed. First, it was Art in the Park, and it was there for a number of years. And then it was moved to Hilton Coliseum, and Carol had the very apt name. I don't think it was official name, Art in the Parking Lot. Our next guest is Marilyn Anderson, who is active both as an artist and... Marilyn, could you introduce yourself?
Good morning. Yeah, Marilyn Anderson. I'm a rug weaver, basically, coordinator of Farm to Folk, which is a community organization connecting food growers with food eaters.
But you used to actually also on your farm have your own sheep?
Oh, I still do have. Well, I have Angora goats now, but they're fiber animals that I raise for my rugs.
So, and those you have marketed at various festivals, is that right?
Yes. Over the years, I've been doing festivals around Iowa and Minnesota, and I'm kind of phasing that part of my life out. But I still do enjoy doing the Octagon Art Festival.
Besides that it's close to home, what is there something special about the Octagon Arts Festival? Is it better for you than the others?
Well, I see so many people I know when I come to it. It's such a great community event, and they do a nice job with entertainment, and it gets the whole town out.
Food
and yeah, and they have a nice selection of artists there. So all those things make it really worthwhile for a vendor to go because there's a big crowd.
And they have entertainment now, too, as they didn't used to have. So I think probably after we thank you both for coming in, we'll have just a sample of the music that will be played. Would this be in Tom Evans Park? You know, now it's on Main Street with the little white tents.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I saw over 100 vendors.
I think that's right, yeah. And they fill up the street, that's for sure.
And Carol Horowitz announced that there would be no rain because this is the driest weekend of the year. And so you can count on good weather. So this is next Sunday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Main Street on the 27th. So could we hear just a little of the music? That was Voodoo by Worldport. And you can hear more of their music at Tom Evans Park this Sunday afternoon or morning at the Octagon Arts Festival. And we've had the segment of our program with interview by Martha Benson, a founder, and one of the vendors, Marilyn Anderson. Thank you, Marilyn, for being here with us. And our consultants from the Ames Historical Society, Alex Pfeiffer, who has a little more to say about the Octagon.
I just wanted everyone to know that it's kind of somewhat related to the Octagon, but we're going to have an exhibit starting on October 19th that's going to be a time of expansion, the Ames building boom of 1915-1916, and that's going to highlight four buildings here in town: Mary Greeley Medical Center, the YSS building, which is originally the municipal building, the Sheldon Munn Hotel, and the Masonic Temple, which is the Octagon Center. So we're going to be featuring an exhibit on four of those buildings, and it's going to be opening October 19th at the Ames History Center on Douglas Avenue.
Well, thank you. And history just keeps happening.
It does. It keeps going on every day, every minute. Thank you so much for having me today.
Well, thank you. And Tom, now I think you could introduce our next guest.
Well, my friend Dennis Hart once taught journalism with me at Iowa State University many years ago, but he spent most of his career as a political reporter at radio and TV stations around the country. Now he's retired, but he's still doing reports for a television station in California, where Dennis says there isn't much happening on the political scene. What have you been discovering during your visit to our fair city, Dennis?
Well, I'll tell you what. Across the country, Iowa is known as the epicenter of politics at this time of the year, and it certainly is. In California, nothing's going on, no campaigning. Here, I've been here for a week and a half. And, of course, it has been dramatic. Virtually every candidate has been here. It is exactly as Iowa is portrayed across the country. I've personally seen a couple of candidates here in Ames since I've been here, Rick Santorum and Lindsey Graham. Been to a couple of Democratic Party meetings, been to Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders' headquarters. It is a fascinating thing that goes on in Iowa, and very few people across the country know, of course, how this process works, how the Iowa caucuses actually work. All they know is Iowa has what is perceived to be an outsized influence on the American political system. It certainly is true, seen it firsthand here. And this is not my first caucus. 1980 was my first Iowa caucus. But this is fascinating to see how every candidate comes through this state of 3 million people. And people here love it. They love the influence that they have, and it seems to be enormous in the political process.
Well, one of the reasons why Iowa works as a kind of a screening process is that it makes it affordable for almost anybody who wants to give the race a try. They can do it because much of what happens here is face-to-face,
right,
in little communities and backyards and so on. And these folks who aspire to be president have a chance to talk to people directly. And if for whatever reason they don't resonate with the folks here in Iowa, there's a good chance they aren't going to do well elsewhere either. And so it does help to narrow the field. Mm-hmm. Iowa hasn't always picked the winner.
Right.
But
right.
We have narrowed the field so that the nation then has fewer people that they can concentrate on and learn about.
Right. We will recall that the winner of the Iowa caucus 4 years ago was Rick Santorum, barely over Mitt Romney, although Romney was reported as the winner initially that night. And 4 years earlier, it was Mike Huckabee, neither of whom became president. However, Iowa does play a winnowing role, as you well know, because it was in 2008 when Barack Obama stunned Hillary Clinton here, who was the presumed frontrunner and nominee, and she never recovered, essentially, from Iowa, from that caucus night. No, it really is retail politics here. Unlike California, which is a media market, it's too big for people to do what happens here. It's a television market. Lots of TV ads. You have television ads here. I've seen a plethora of them. But I've also seen Rick Santorum speaking at Iowa State University a couple of days ago in front of a crowd of 75 people. Lindsey Graham at Old Main last Saturday, 35, 40 people, one-on-one. And these folks, and what you're impressed with when they do this, is that you see the depth of their knowledge. You may or may not agree with either of those candidates, but they exhibited for an hour the ability to ad lib comments, questions from people, and give detailed, nuanced answers, which the media often do not get in television or radio. Graham, for example, exhibited tremendous nuance on his Middle Eastern policy. What anybody knows who's seen him on Meet the Press is he wants to go into the Middle East and fight. But it was nuanced in terms of his knowledge of Islam and the Muslim problem, et cetera, et cetera. And it wasn't this blowtorch guy that the media portray. And that's what's impressive, is that folks come in here one-on-one, as you say, Tom, and they'll go to storefronts, they'll go to small rallies. This is a way of winnowing them out. They get to hone their message here one-on-one with people. They don't get to do that. By the time they're in California, it's basically a media campaign out there.
In fact, the individual voter who might be objecting to Iowa's oversized influence in the political process, but the average voter in another state like California or even my home state of Washington would likely not have a chance to see these folks,
right,
or certainly not talk to them. But here in Iowa, here you are, you're visiting, and you were able to ask questions of these candidates while you were here.
Right. In fact, I was the first questioner. I tend to sit in the front row of these things, being a reporter. But, yeah, anybody could ask those questions. And you just look at who came to town. Eight of the Republican candidates were in Des Moines last Saturday night for a conference. They all spoke. You've got Bernie Sanders coming to Iowa, Central Iowa, this weekend. They're all here. It's a one-on-one opportunity. And I think – I'm not sure Iowans truly appreciate the opportunity they have. Very few people in other states get this chance to be inundated, if you will. And I know some Iowans probably say, oh, gosh, it's caucus time. Do we have to go through that again?
Yeah, they do, in fact. Yeah.
But you know what? It's exciting. It is one-on-one with these candidates. You're 6 feet away from perhaps the future president of the United States. That's one thing. But the second thing is you get to see them not perform, but exhibit their knowledge or lack of it on specific important issues. And again, that's almost unparalleled. They get a little bit of that in New Hampshire, but New Hampshire, because it's a week after Iowa, really gets the second thing, the fallout, if you will, the rebound from the destruction that the caucuses may have done here to particular candidates, as they did with Hillary Clinton 8 years ago. That's what's so fascinating. And this time around, here we are in 2016, and Bernie Sanders, a socialist, is leading Hillary Clinton in Iowa and New Hampshire. That's absolutely fascinating.
And as far as I know, he hasn't run any advertising.
No, I have seen none. I've seen none.
But he has gotten large crowds, both in Iowa and in other places.
There's no question in the time I've been here, and we can't sense this out west, but it's great to be here to see this. The energy on the Democratic side clearly seems to me to be with Sanders. He clearly has the excitement going on. With Hillary Clinton, it's a matter of, and I've talked to a lot of Democrats since I've been here, it's a matter of, oh gosh, here we go again. And, you know, it's the same thing, this drip, drip, drip of potential scandal with the email thing and all of this. I don't think Democrats are excited about Hillary Clinton, and the polls show that. Bernie Sanders has all the excitement, but there's also this third guy out there that a lot of folks I've talked to here really are waiting, holding their breath. Is he going to jump in, Joe Biden? I think a lot of folks here want that to happen. And how would that roil Iowa politics if Joe Biden announces in the next few weeks he's running? Wow.
Well, I've had people tell me they think that he would take support from both Sanders and Clinton,
yeah,
if he did decide to run. And, of course, one wonders how long can you wait to enter the race when people are beginning to commit and campaign organizations are beginning to form. And if you wait too long, you've lost a lot of the talent that you need to win a campaign.
I don't think he can wait much longer. I think he's got to do it in the next few weeks at the very latest, because as you say, the fundraisers, the people who raise the money and give the money, they're lined up. Now, I think he'll peel off some Hillary support. I think he'll peel off some Bernie Sanders support. He has a shot at this, but he has to do it right. And in my impression, the right way for him to do this would be to announce, yes, I'm running. Elizabeth Warren is going to be my running mate. Put that out there right now. She has a lot of energy in the party as well. I think the support you're seeing for Bernie at this point is not just he's a fresh face, though he's 74 years old. It's that he's not Hillary Clinton. And a lot of folks are just looking for I think an alternative to Hillary, and Bernie happens to be it. If it were Biden who had jumped in, it would be Biden. But there's this weariness. That's the word I want to use with Hillary at this point. Not just with her, but with the Clinton family, Bill, Hillary. There's a weariness, as there is on the Republican side with the Bushes. You know, Jeb Bush running again. Okay, wow. Do we really want Clinton and Bush? Have we seen enough of that? We're going to find out if we've seen enough of that.
I just saw an ad for Mr. Bush on one of the Des Moines stations. So we're going to begin to see more video of these candidates. Very interesting that an advertising campaign for the governor of Wisconsin just started the very week he announced that he was dropping out. And this was amazing because he had quite a financial war chest. He had quite a bit of money and everything. But for whatever reason, his message didn't seem to resonate. And he realized pretty well up that this wasn't going to work.
Right. And he was the leader in the early Des Moines Register polls for the caucuses. Scott Walker had the lead here, but his campaign never took off. He appeared tentative. In fact, in the two Republican debates, he almost disappeared. He was going to have a tough road anyway. This is unlike any campaign I've ever covered because you've got something in there, somebody in there we've never seen the likes of before, Donald Trump. And this is the first time we've mentioned him. He almost defies every rule of politics that we know. He's made personal attacks on a number of candidates and reporters. He has denigrated John McCain's heroism, being a prisoner of war. He has personally attacked Megyn Kelly on Fox News. He's turned Fox News into mainstream news by going on a war against Fox News.
It's part remarkable. Of the liberal media.
It's remarkable. Donald Trump seems impervious to the normal rules of politics that we've seen, that I've seen over 11 presidential campaigns. Normally, this type of personal attack would have dropped you in the polls. He hasn't dropped in the polls. He's still
leading.
There's
a lot of talk about why he's just reflecting the anger that a lot of people
Absolutely.
Have.
The Republican Party particularly, Republican voters, extraordinarily angry about what's happened in this country in the past few years. We're talking not just immigrants coming in, which Trump has bashed, the gay marriage. We've talked about gays having the right to marry. We've talked about Obamacare being supported by the U.S. Supreme Court. Republicans very angry that their leaders have not managed to turn back the clock. Trump exemplifies and transfers that anger. It's remarkable how he has tapped into it. I absolutely think I didn't think this a month ago that he had the shot at getting the nomination. I think he has a shot at getting the nomination because somebody has to beat him at some point, and nobody's beating him in any polls in any state. That's remarkable.
Not yet. Who knows? Susan was suggesting she'd be curious to know your thoughts about
caucus process. I'd like to mention that because I don't think people around the country understand it. It's why Iowa is so important. It's a small number of people here, but the caucus process means that it's not the primaries. That's why the TV ads don't matter.
Right.
It's not the people who show up at the polls. It's not the voters. It's the people who care to go to the caucuses. And historically, that was very few people. Now it's – I mean, they always used to be held in people's living rooms. And now they're held in schools. Do you want to comment on what the caucus process means?
Well, I think you're absolutely correct that no one in the country, no one out there understands exactly how this works. They've heard the term Iowa caucus, but they think the common perception out there is that on that night, on February 1st this coming year, that people go and it's the final step. They go and they decide and that's it. They have no idea about the process in terms of electing delegates to the county and to the district and to the state. No clue about that whatsoever. This is an effort at organization. What Iowa brings out, the best and the worst of the candidates, is the ability not just to be out there, and we know that Rick Santorum says he's been in every Iowa county, all 99 of them, but how do you organize yourself? How do you organize grassroots? It's a grassroots phenomenon out there because it's difficult to get out. In California, it's very easy to vote in June. It's warm. In February in Iowa, it's cold. And people have to want to get out there. You have to want to support your candidate. You have to be organized. You have to have people in every county. You have to have an immense amount of talent out there. And that's what may or may not make a difference. That's where Barack Obama stunned Hillary Clinton 8 years ago. Just absolutely, she didn't see it coming because his people had been here. So it takes organizational talent. Yeah, the television ads, it's a very interesting thing. As you point out, they're all over. You know, you watch a local newscast at 6 o'clock, boom, you see every candidate virtually in the course of a day and a half or 2 days because they're all buying spots on the stations in order to get their word out. But it's very much a house-to-house, church-to-church, person-to-person thing. And you're right. Nobody knows how that works here in Iowa. It's a remarkable thing. There is always a call every few years. Why does Iowa have this? Why are they first? Why should they have this influence? You know, it's a state of 3 million people, largely homogenous. Should they have this outsized influence? And my impression is, yeah, they should. They should, because it shows a candidate for either being organized, disciplined, capable of putting something together, or they're not. And if they can't do it in Iowa, they're probably not going to be able to do it very many other places in the country. They really aren't.
Interesting observations. We've been hearing observations from a dear friend of mine, a political reporter who retired and is still keeping his hand in the reporting business, Dennis Hart. Dennis, thank you very much for your comments, and I hope your examination of the political races in Iowa will continue to surprise, delight, and possibly appall you. I've been talking, as I said, with Dennis Hart, a political reporter from California, who's spending a few weeks tracking the political campaigns in Iowa.
Thanks for inviting me, and you're buying dinner tonight, aren't you?
You have been listening to KHOI Community Radio. Today we explore the International Peace Walk, the history of the Octagon Art Center, sponsor of Sunday's Art Festival in Ames on Main Street, and with Dennis Hart on the Iowa presidential candidates. Your hosts today have been Tom Beal and Susan Franzen.
And we had a number of guests, Susan. Kimberly Holt from IRIS, Hanan Masood, an international student, Muhammad Al-Abri, Muhammad Al-Makani, Alex Pfeiffer, Martha Benson, Marilyn Anderson, and, of course, Dennis Hart.
The music you heard was Voodoo by Worldport from their album Worldview. This show was engineered by Richard Morrison. And our theme music, as always, is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
Well, this show, like all local talk shows, is repeated at noon and 7 p.m. at 89.1, as well as streaming live at KHOI-FM. As listener and contributor, you keep us on the air. Comments and contributions may be sent to khoifm.org or at the Pantorium at 410 Douglas Avenue, Ames, Iowa, 50010. And we invite you to come down and visit us.
Thanks for listening, and
we'll see you
again
on the radio.